Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to another episode of World Endurance Chat. I'm Floodman11, and today we were meant to have the Sebring wrap-up and the Prologue Preview podcast, but unfortunately we're still working on putting that together. Instead, Chris Washer has put together an episode previewing this season's Super GT over in Japan, and with him he has a special guest, so yeah, hope you enjoy.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Welcome to a Japanese sports car and endurance special episode here in Endurance Chat. My guest, of course, it's RJ Okano. You can't have a Japanese sports car podcast without this man right here. Editor, owner of Super GT World and writes for DailySportsCar.com for his Super GT and Super Taikyu stories. And speaking of Super Taikyu, we're going to start that off first. And for the people who never heard of what Super Taikyu is, can you elaborate on that very, very quickly?
Well, hello and welcome back. Good to be back on Endurance Chat. So the way I sell the Super Taikyu series, the Pirelli Super Taikyu series, that's going to be one of the big stories
this year. Yeah, that's right. New title sponsor.
Yes, new title sponsor and a new exclusive tire supplier in Pirelli to take over from Yokohama. I digress. If you are a fan of the Kreventic 24-hour series, if you are a fan of the VLN Endurance Championship, if you are even a fan of, let's say, IMSA's Continental Tire Sports Car Championship, I think you would find Super Taikyu to be a very good product. Now, there are 8 different classes. There will only be 7 of them at the first round, which is this weekend, which may either be happening by the time you listen to this, or it may just be finished by the time you are listening to this podcast. Of course, at the top, you have your GT3 cars, and these are all contemporary GT3s. Below that, you are supposed to have GT4s, though there are no GT4s on the grid for this opening round. Then you have the TCR cars, and those proved to be a big success last year. That grid has now doubled from 2017 to 2018. That's going to be a class to watch. And then below them are 5 production-based categories, ST1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. ST1 is basically for your Porsche Cup cars, Lamborghini Super Trofeos, anything that's production-based and has more than 3.5 liters of displacement. Then there are ST2 and ST3. ST2 and ST3, engine size are the same, 2 to 3.5 liters. The big difference is in ST2, the power goes in some way to the front wheels. It's front and all-wheel drive cars. In ST3, it's rear-wheel drive. And then ST4 is for 1.5 to 2 liter cars. And ST5 is for anything under 1.5 liters. So you get a good mix of, purpose-built GT3 race cars and TCR touring cars going up against very, very stock-looking cars like the Toyota 86, the Mazda Roadster, the Honda Fit, the Nissan Fairlady Z, Mitsubishi Lancers, cars like that. And this is a true Pro-Am Endurance Championship. In all the top classes, the GT3, GT4, and TCR category, you must have at least one gentleman driver to counterbalance one pro driver, and then you can have any combination of drivers thereof. You'll see a lot of cross-pollination between Super GT and Super Taikyu. A lot of GT300 drivers also race in Super Taikyu as well. You'll see a lot of past drivers from the series, maybe older drivers who are just retired, or maybe some drivers who never really got the opportunities to shine in Super GT that they maybe should have. It's good competition. The first round is a 5-hour race at Suzuka. It'll happen this weekend, and Super Taikyu launched last year their own live streaming service, Super Taikyu TV. It's good entertainment. You can watch the races live. They have pretty good feeds of the trackside cameras. There's intermittent commentary. There's very pleasing, very cheesy, but still very pleasing, relaxing background music along the way. So if you want to follow the series, I think there's never been a better time to start than with this weekend's first round of the season.
And looking at this GT3 grid, it's been expanded a little, and it's a pretty big team. Phoenix Racing has decided to join the fray. How do you think a major team like this is going to affect maybe the viewership numbers and maybe more interest into the series in the future?
Well, they're certainly going to bring a lot of interest from continental Asia, from places like Hong Kong, Taiwan, China, Malaysia. That's a very, very good group of cars that they've got together. Three Phoenix Racing-backed Asia cars, and in amongst their lineup, of course, Marchie Lee, the team's owner and driver, is there. But then you have a car that also has F1 pioneer Alex Yung from Malaysia in the car, alongside Sean Tong, who's a very good young driver from Hong Kong. And Super GT fans will be familiar with former GT300 champion Andre Couto. He's in a car with Jeffrey Lee of J-Fly Racing this year. Phoenix Racing Asia, I believe, has the potential to make an immediate impact. They were very good in testing. I feel like it's definitely going to be a battle between Phoenix Racing at Asia and, of course, the established powers from Nissan. They have three different cars. Kondo Racing, who won the title in 2016. Endless Sports, who won in 2015, albeit with a much different car. And GT Net Motorsports, who won it in 2014. Pound for pound, the Nissan GTR was... it's still one of the best cars. I know it is a model that is now nearing the end of its lifespan. And we'll talk about that in our GT300 preview. But that's still a fast car. Kondo Racing, Tomonobu Fuji, Kazuki Hiromine, and gentleman driver Yudai Ichida were the fastest team in testing at Fuji Speedway a couple of weeks ago. Of course, one of the big stories of this offseason was the withdrawal of ARN Racing and their Ferrari 48 GT3, which is going to Blancpain GT Series Asia. A bit of controversy over the way they won the title last year. For those who may not have known, they were thrown out of qualifying because the fuel that they used for qualifying was not the fuel that was provided at the track. In Super Tiger, you have to use the fuel that is provided at the commercial gas pump at each circuit. They had brought over fuel from Fuji. They were disallowed from qualifying. They were allowed to start the race, which caused protest, and that protest caused the final results of the championship to be withheld until December. ARN Racing did not say that this was specifically the reason why they left. They went to Blancpain GT Series Asia to do other challenges, they said. But regardless, we are going to have a new champion in the premier class of STS. That's the GT3 category. And it's going to be a very, very, very closely fought title, I feel.
Now, we'll go just below a rung here from GT3. TCR, now you mentioned that this grid doubled in size. What did you see from testing that's going to excite you?
Well, curiously, the defending champions were not there, and that would be Dome Racing and their fleet of Honda Civics. This year, they have two of the new 2018 models, the FK8 generation Honda Civics. But the quickest cars in testing were from Audi Team Dream Drive. Now, Honda and Dome Racing seem to have the most well-prepared cars on the grid. But the Audi RS3 LMS, it's a very popular car. It had great one-lap speed in qualifying. It was quickest in testing. And there is also in the midst a single Volkswagen Golf GTI, which basically ran away from the field in the biggest race of the year, the Fuji Supertech. And we'll talk a little bit about some very big changes that's going to make that a event to watch for next year. This is going to be a very, very close grid. I still like the Dome Racing Hondas, the number 97 and 98 in particular, to be the dominant cars in the championship. I mean, just if you take a look at the driver lineups they've assembled between the two cars, you have Hiroki Kato leading the charge in the number 98 car. He is an incredibly experienced driver, has made several appearances at the 24 Hours of Le Mans, been a Super GT mainstay for nearly 20 years. But that number 97 car, just looking at the lineup of their pro drivers, you have Hiroki Otsu, who is a Honda Young driver. You have Shinji Nakano, who brings in a ton of endurance sports car racing and, of course, some Formula One and IndyCar experience. And Takashi Kobayashi, who was just displaced from a GT500 ride this offseason, and we'll talk about that in a second, that might be the car to watch. But I would not be surprised as well if Audi, after so many times where they look quick enough to win that category, I think this is the year one of their cars finally takes the top step of the podium in TCR.
And now we're going to go to ST1, ST2, ST3, etc. Going to look at all those classes combined to finish off this little preview of maybe like a little bit of an entry list preview. ST1 is basically, like you said, the cup class that it's been begging for entries recently. Only really one or two cars in the races. So can you elaborate on what other things in the other classes that we didn't mention yet that is going to be very interesting in the season to come?
Well, in ST1, of course, there is going to be two cars to start the season. Now, it may not be that way to finish the season because APR Racing, who were last year's ST1 champions pretty much by default, they have plans to move up to STS as they prepare for the Suzuka 10 Hours and move up with a Porsche 911 GT3R. So it may give D-Station Racing a clear lane to the championship at ST1. ST2, this is effectively your rally-inspired category. This has traditionally been Mitsubishi Lancer Evolutions versus Subaru Impreza WRXs. A single Subaru, fielded by Toa Intec Racing, have won this title 5 times in a row. It does not look like they are going to be challenged much for the title, although diehard Super Taikyu fans will notice a change to ST2. It used to be for all-wheel drive cars. It is now for all- and front-wheel drive cars, which means that Team NoPro have a front-wheel drive Mazda 3, a diesel car that is joining the category, though they may be overmatched. ST3 is where you really start to see the participation. You have a lot of Lexus luxury coupes and sedans. You have a lot of Nissan Fairlady Zs. The standout in that class, from what I saw in testing, was Le Bossey Motorsport. If you look at the driver lineup, they have two of Toyota's best young drivers. Kenta Yamashita, who is in GT500 and Super Formulas this year, and they've just added Rotomo Miata, who is their newest and youngest top star, who's making his Super Taikyu debut this year. They were the favorites to win the title, lost it on a technical infringement at Okayama to Tracy Sports, but on paper, that is the team that I look forward to winning in ST3. ST4, you have a lot of Toyota 86s. They make up 3/4 of the grid. And Tom Spirit, again, it's another case of how on earth do you stack a lineup this tall with Takamitsu Matsui, with Yuichi Nakayama, and with Shotsu Boy, another Toyota young driver. These are two Toyota young drivers and a former GT300 champion in that mix. And these are all guys who have either raced at the Nürburgring or they are Toyota factory drivers in some capacity. That's going to be another car that I think they dominated in 2017. I expect more of that in 2018. ST5, again, it's your flyweight category. A lot of Mazda Roadsters, a lot of subcompact front-wheel drive cars like the Honda Fit and the Mazda 2. There's a bright orange Mazda Roadster from Murakami Motors that pretty much won the title hand over fist last year. There is one popular team that did not have all the results, but were definitely gaining a following, and that is Love Drive Racing. That is the Keiko Ohara team run by the Mazda Women in Motorsports Project. They have an all-female driver lineup again this year. They had a tough year last season, but I think a lot of people will definitely be looking to that team to improve in 2018. Also, just touching back on the story of Pirelli joining the series as the official tire supplier, testing reports say a lot of drivers really love the car, especially love the tires. It's a durable tire, and that's going to come in handy for Super Taikyu's very first 24-hour race in over a decade.
Yeah, we're going to mention that. We do have 52 entries at the Suzuka 5 Hours this weekend. The bigger picture is, of course, the first 24-hour race Japan had, in a decade.
Right.
And how did this come into play? Why did this happen? And even Fuji's excited for this. They even started installing lights around the track.
Yes, and it is the first 24-hour race at Fuji Speedway, which is the traditional home of sports car endurance racing, touring car racing in Japan, has been ever since it has opened. But this is the first time that Fuji Speedway, this facility, has hosted a 24-hour race on its own in 50 years. Now, some fans may be familiar with an event called the Tokachi 24 Hours, which was held at the Tokachi Circuit in the Hokkaido region right up until the circuit closed in the event of the 2009 economic crisis and never reopened despite plans to get back going. So there was always a gap for, there was always a market for a 24-hour endurance race in Japan. A lot of things kept it from happening until it was announced right during the weekend of last year's Fuji Super Tech 10 Hours in September that the race would be moving to a 24-hour event, and it would be moving to the first weekend of June. That's going to be a big challenge. It's especially a different challenge for a lot of these drivers who are not used to racing at the nighttime. So they did do a night test in preseason. They will have another test leading up to this event in May. This is going to be a fun event to watch. I feel it's going to attract a lot of entries. They expect over 60 cars to enter this one. So we'll get a lot of one-offs that we aren't seeing on the grid at Suzuka. It has the potential to be something very, very special, and a good complement to events like the Suzuka 10 Hours and the Fuji 1000 Kilometers and the Fuji GT 500 Mile Race, which again we'll talk about later on as we delve right into the Super GT season to come.
So that's been kind of a little dip of the toes for Super Taikyu. If you want to watch, just search up Super Taikyu 2017. You'll easily find the 5-6 hour long live streams. Subscribe to that channel. And of course, if the live streams are not in your forte, because most of the live streams, par from Suzuka, only had static cameras around the track, they do have 30-minute highlight shows that they have, and that shows more camera views, even though it's very, very, very cut up into bits and pieces. But that's how you can get your Super Taikyu fix for 2018. And now we go to the main guys, Super GT. And let's start up from the GT300 class first.
Oh, what a grid this is. We still have one less car than we did last season. Yeah, we only dropped from 30 to a paltry 29 cars. And how terrible it is that I could count up the top of my head 14 cars that could potentially win a race in an 8-race season. How terrible this is. No, this is going to be another banner grid that we'll have in 2018. As much love as the GT500 cars get, and they should because they are simply put the finest sports cars on the planet, give some love to the GT300 class. Give some love to the fact that this is effectively a pro-am category that's now become a mixture of pro, pro-am, and all-pro, where full-on factory teams and privateers can fight on equal grounds, where you effectively have three different types of cars all racing on equal footing, and all their strengths and weaknesses come to play forefront at different tracks.
And it's kind of ironic in a bit. We've seen the Honda NSX GT3 participate in American sports car racing, particularly in Pearly World Challenge and IMSA, also making its European debut in ADAC GT Masters this April in Aschersleben. But after all this time in America, this is going to be the first time the Honda NSX has competed in a Super GT race, the GT3 version.
Yes, and I think 2018 was going to be the year that Honda was looking forward to, because they wanted to soft launch this American-built GT3 car in America at IMSA, and it, to its part, it did a very good job winning races in GT Daytona, doing reasonably well in Pirelli World Challenge, and now it's ready for its full-on customer debut. We did not see the two cars really shine so much at Okayama International Circuit, but I'll tell you, once they went to Fuji Speedway, I don't know whether it's just the low drag of the car or whether that car just produces a lot of horsepower out of its 3.5-liter twin-turbocharged V6 engine, but they really picked up the pace once they got to Fuji down that high-speed back straightaway. This gives a good opportunity for a new team to make their debut, Carguy Racing, and for a team to return, and that is Mojelo Drago Corsa. That is Ryo Michigami's team, and Ryo Michigami not only back as an owner, but for the first time since 2013, back as a full-time Super GT driver. Yes, it's not in GT500, it is down in GT300, but the old Dragon can still, he could still go.
And speaking of drivers, there's just a huge amount of talent coming into this class this year. I mean, first of all, Marco Mappelli and a bunch of other Japanese rookies. And you have, you know, all these guys from, you know, Super GT 500 that's decided, hey, if we're going to have some fun in GT 300, what's the deal with all these guys coming to GT 300? Are they just not having fun in GT 500 anymore?
Well, it's really the thing here is because GT 500, the standard has been moved so high that you literally cannot afford to have a down year or a string of down years. And the cases of the three drivers that got demoted, two of them won races last year. One of them is a two-time GT 500 champion, and simply put, Toyota, Honda, and Nissan found no room for them anymore on their GT 500 driver rosters, so instead, they're moving down to GT 300. It is crazy times that we live in. The one name that really sticks out to me is Kohei Hirate, who's going to be driving APR Racing's number 31 Toyota Prius. Again, he won one of the best races of the year, maybe one of the best Super GT races ever at Sugo, but got himself involved in a number of on-track incidents. Apart from that, whether or not that was the ultimate decision of why Lexus decided when they need to bring in other drivers that he was one of the first ones to be pushed out, we don't know. But Hirate is a very experienced competitor. He's a very quick competitor, and I think he's going to be very determined to make the most of his new opportunity in the number 31 Prius this year. They had a tough time getting to grips with the car in preseason testing at Okayama, but I think they really settled down once they got to Fuji. And that's a car that has been a title contender in recent years past. Plus, it's a Toyota Prius with a 3.4-liter XLMP1 V8 engine paired to an LMP1-derived hybrid powertrain producing over 450 horsepower with enough downforce to snap your neck on command.
And we do have another debut in this GT300 class. It's the brand new Nissan. And you've kind of forwarded that a bit when we had the Super Taikyu talk and how the Nissans over there are getting outdated. I believe this will be at least the Japanese debut for the car. How do you think it'll fare in its first season, more or less its first race at Okayama?
I think a lot of people were surprised that it did not do so well in testing, but big things should be expected. I think it's more or less a case of Gainer that is going to be the new Nissan de facto works GT300 team now with NDP Racing moving up to GT500, which we'll expand upon later. They are also a team that's brought in a GT500 castaway, Hironobu Yasuda, formerly of CalSonic Team Impel, another former GT300 champion. In fact, Gainer have added Kazuki Hoshino from the NDP Racing squad in GT300 last year. So you have an accomplished second-generation driver, a two-time GT300 champion, Hoshino, and a former GT300 champion, multi-time GT500 race winner, Yasuda, coming into a Gainer team that is very, very determined to make the most of their new opportunity. And from what we hear, they may be angling to move up to GT500 thanks to their new partnership with Nissan. Of course, they've been a garage divide in recent years, splitting it between Mercedes and Nissan the last three seasons. Now it is an all-Nissan campaign. Now they have a new car. They just need to wrap their heads around it. The fact that they weren't as quick in Fuji was not really a surprise. This car has a lot more downforce. It's not as strung out for out-and-out top speed like the previous generation GTR GT3 was. I should also point out, by the way, as well, the last of those drivers, Takashi Kobayashi, landed a pretty handy drive with another former Honda GT500 driver in Yuki Nakayama at Team Up Garage in their dome-built Toyota 86 MC. And that could be a team to watch. They have yet to have a podium finish to date. I think with those two drivers in that car, which is a very quick and capable machine, especially in the right circumstances at the technical tracks, they're going to get some podiums, and I would not be surprised either if they picked up a win or two this year.
And this car did compete in the VLN late last year, so it does have some testing under racing conditions.
Yes, that would be
at the Nürburgring at the very least.
Yes, that would be the GTR, not the 86MC, although I would like to see the 86MC take a few laps around the Nordschleife. I figured you'd find a class for it in the VLN. They got to.
So, on the topic of the Nissan GTR, with the testing that at least Nismo did there, I think at least Gaynor probably could have picked up some tips from them. And now with GT, that's basically GT300. Now let's talk about the class overall. We just got done with testing the series official test from Fuji. Who looked the best overall throughout the off season? Who had the fastest car, reliability? Any of those, any important stories?
Well, the one thing I can tell you is that between Okayama and Fuji, this is a tale of two different testing weekends to suit two different types of cars. At the two Okayama tests, the top times of both days one and day two were set by mother chassis cars, which have less power than the GT3 cars that make up most of the grid, but way more downforce. And unsurprisingly, at Fuji, which is a more of a power track anyway, the best times of the first and second days of testing at that circuit were set by GT3 cars, a BMW M6 and a Porsche 911 GT3R. Honestly, I could count over a dozen teams that could potentially win a race. Mercedes, who are bringing upgrades to their cars gradually, they were obviously the dominant manufacturer of the category, winning 4 of the 8 races last season. Big things also expected from Lexus, who finally put together a winning package and a winning program for their cars. Their program now grows by one because they've acquired Ardo Panther Team Thailand as a customer, part of the Toyota Gazoo Racing Lexus Customer Racing family, to join the two cars at LM Corsa.
With GT300, the previews done and dusted, we go to GT500. These cars, just no way to describe them without at least having you see a picture. These cars, with, of course, Honda, Lexus, Nissan, are built up to about DTM standards. They have about the same size rear wing, and that's kind of basically, that's all the similarities to the cars. The rest is just completely different. The engines produce more horsepower. There's a tire war.
Yes, that's the big thing that sets Super GT and DTM two different categories. Two similar categories, but they are so much different in the speed they produce, and that's down to the tire war between Bridgestone, Michelin, Yokohama, and Dunlop. Obviously, when you have a controlled tire, the cars are not going to be as fast because you're not generating as much mechanical grip out of a controlled tire as you are when there is an open tire war. This is one of the few professional series left that we still have an open tire war, apart from the WEC in bits and pieces, but even still. And it's awesome to see that each tire maker seems to have a different strength. The Dunlop seem to make their best work in off-track conditions. The Yokohama seem to have good long-run pace over short-term grip. The Michelins excel on hot tracks. The Bridgestones have supreme grip. Each one has a strength. Each one has a different weakness. So it does make for some very fascinating racing, not just in the differences between the manufacturers and the teams, but also in the differences between the tire suppliers. Which actually brings me to one of my next points, is that there is an F1 technology in terms of engine building, turbulent jet ignition. Basically, it's a more effective form of internal combustion rather than the traditional spark plug. You can use less fuel to generate power, and you can express the extra economy in either more fuel economy or more power. Honda were the first ones to do this. We understand that Lexus and Nissan have adopted similar tech systems. It's why the fuel flow restrictions, which are part of GT500 success ballast, have actually been tightened up at each stage from 2017 to 2018. By the way, success ballast is not all weight, because over 50 kilograms, they start putting fuel flow restrictions on the car. So yes, there's still less weight, but you don't get as much power through the middle stages of the season. So that is definitely going to be something to look forward to see how these teams have progressed in the engine department, because I can tell you that Lexus did start off 2017, obviously, with the superior package in terms of horsepower and aerodynamics and downforce. But towards the end of 2017, we saw both Honda and Nissan make inroads on their rivals. Yes, Lexus did have the most wins, and yes, they did win the championship, but Nismo in particular, out of that Nissan camp, made it close, and Honda finally got back to their winning ways, and in doing so, when they won, they did it quite convincingly at Fuji and Suzuka last year.
And with these cars being so technically advanced, we have a few rookies, if you can even say that. Jenson Button, Felix Rosenquist, I believe Kamui Kobayashi is a GT500 rookie this year. Yes. These are guys that are household names for some people, but yet this is their first time going to be racing in a GT500 car.
And here's the crazy thing about this, because between those three drivers, you have Jenson Button, which, yes, he does come in with 17 Formula One seasons under his belt. But this, apart from his one-off at the Suzuka 1000 kilometer last year, this is something that's all new to him. He has never driven a full season a car with a roof over its head, a car that he has to share with another teammate, a car with fenders on it. This is all very, very new stuff to him. Most of the circuits are different. The people that he's going to be racing in, mostly different. Jensen has adapted to a field row. Felix Rosenquist just seems to be the ultimate plug-and-play option in contemporary motorsport. He will get into anything, and he will pretty much win in anything. And it was no surprise that when he missed the first weekend of preseason testing at Okayama because he had a Formula E race to do, which he did reasonably well in, he jumped back in his Lexus LC500 and was immediately one of the quickest drivers on the track. That does not surprise me.
The guy even fits Porsche Carrera Cup Scandinavia into his schedule. He has a lot going on.
Oh, yes, indeed. He's a winner in Indy Lights. He's won pretty much every big Formula 3 prize there is. He was a title contender in Super Formula, which is how he eventually got this ride. Not much else to say other than maybe the wrong sweetness in Formula 1, but that's another debate for another time. All I know is this, out of those three, it's Kamui Kobayashi who has the most sports car endurance racing experience, and he's the one that's struggling the most with getting used to the way GT500 cars behave in comparison to the LMP1s that he's more used to driving. Yes, LMP1s are a lot more sophisticated, but driving a GT500 car, it's a bit of a different animal, and Kobayashi did not have the best time in testing. Obviously, he is a professional driver. I expect him to improve, especially when paired with another fellow Grand Prix hero in Heikki Kovalainen, who is just coming off of a championship 2 years ago. But preseason testing shows that Lexus Team SAR definitely need to pick up the pace. Might I also add, they're not true Super GT rookies, but Kenta Yamashita of Lexus Team Wet Sport Bondo and Mitsunori Takeboshi of Kondo Racing, both of them getting their first full-time GT500 opportunities, and both of them were extraordinarily quick, particularly at the Fuji test. I expect big things from those two young men in 2018.
One thing I did notice, of course, Jenson Button is giving Super GT a brand new exposure through his YouTube channel. We'll get to more of how he's going to cover the races in a bit, but one thing he did say is that the carbon fiber wall that he opens the door to when he gets in the car, it sort of feels like a Formula One car to him. So he was able to adapt a bit more quicker, I think, than if it was kind of not, because he's so surrounded by the safety cell, he feels a bit more comfortable, a bit in his element, more or less.
And I would expect Jenson Button to adapt well to the series. Obviously, he does come with the experience of being a Formula One world champion, part of that exclusive fraternity of drivers. And of course, he is an out-and-out professional driver. And when I think of the way Jenson Button was a driver in his prime, I look at the way these cars behave, and I think this is a perfect fit. Obviously, just because Jenson Button has all of this Formula One experience and all of these accolades does not automatically mean that he's going to win a Super GT Championship right out of the box. That's ludicrous thinking. You think of all the retired Formula One drivers who jumped to DTM, and we all thought they were going to just run away with everything because they're from Formula One and these other guys are not, and some of them had success and some of them did not. At any rate, Jenson Button and Naoki Yamamoto at Team Kunimitsu, that is a very electric combination. I gotta feel like this year, Team Kunimitsu that Ray Bragena sets have their best shot to win their very first GT500 title. They've come close about 11 years ago, but this is the first time where you really think, man, they could seriously make a run for it.
And with all these well-known names we have here in GT500, give us some details about how testing went in this class. Who was the well-known names that creamed to the top, and who was some names that we didn't know that kind of gave you an unexpected shock?
Out of all of this excitement for the new names that are coming in, we kind of forget that they still have to take down the defending champions at Lexus Team Keeper Red Bull Toms. They have to take down Ryo Hirakawa and Nick Cassidy, who only turned 24 this year, who still have their entire future ahead of them, and they're defending champions of the series, and they're only going to get better. Good luck with that. First, and what we saw this year, as opposed to last year in testing, if you recall last season, there were six official test sessions between Okayama and Fuji. Of course, two of them were snowed out last year. This year, we had a split of three of those eight sessions led by Lexus, three of them led by Nissan, two of them led by Honda. It is not going to start the way it did last season, with Lexus winning four races out of the gate with their LC500. Obviously, Honda made significant engine gains towards the end of the season, and so too did Nissan, who took a while to get their legs underneath them at Okayama, but once they got to Fuji, I think they really found another level of pace and another level of performance that I think everybody expected out of the GTRs. Obviously, one win for Nissan like they had last year, and only one of their cars in reasonable title contention was not going to cut it. So they shuffled things up a bit. Daiki Sasaki moves over from Kanda Racing to CalSonic Team Impul. He has been very, very quick in testing since he got into that Bridgestone CalSonic GTR. And as well, there is effectively a new team in NDDP Racing with BMATS, which is run by Masahiro Semi, a Nissan racing legend. But the driver lineup is still the same as the team that it replaced, Mola International. That's Satoshi Motoyama and Katsumasa Chiyo, who are co-drivers in Super GT, and in Super Formula, Motoyama is going to be Chiyo's team principal at BMATS Racing. And this has got to be the year where Chiyo starts to think, right, this is my third year in GT500. It's been a while since that great run in 2015. This is the year where he is expected to deliver upon the promise that he shown when he first arrived in GT500, and I think this is going to be the year that he finally does it. Of course, the heart and the soul of that Nismo squad is still going to be that number 23 red car, the Motulatec GTR, Tsuji Matsuda, Ronnie Cunarelli, six GT500 titles between them and 31 race victories. No big deal.
With you ending on the topic of the red Nissan, we're going to try to transition to a bit on Super GT coverage for 2018. Do you know if Nismo will continue serving the audience, the English audience, of broadcasting the races this year?
Well, you can expect to hear an announcement by the time this episode is released. I have good authority on that. You may have already heard it by the time this episode comes out, but if haven't, again, expect good word that there will be live coverage provided by Nismo in 2018. We can also tell you that Jensen Button, because he is wanting to get more eyeballs and exposure to the series, he has commissioned extended highlights of each round of the championship following his progress and the teams as a whole, and he has brought in the best producers. He brought in Toby Moody from the FIA World Endurance Championship television side of things to be the presenter of that program and do a ton of original features interspersed between the highlights. That is going to be huge as well. I think back to when I first started covering the series, and all I could really do was watch, you know, pirated uploads of original Japanese broadcasts. And coming back from that to where we are now with what Jensen Button is doing through new media, through what Nismo are doing with new media, there's never been a better time to be a Super GT fan than now. And for this, the 25th season of the category, if ever there's a good time to get into it, my guess is it would be now.
And Toby Moody's already on the gun with this YouTube channel Jensen Button is doing. They already did about a 5-minute-long live stream of a little interview in the pits. They did a 10-minute video on how the car works, details about the car, and also a little Q&A they did in, I think, Jensen's room in, Fuji. He's already making content before preseason. This is only going to expand the audience, and it's only going to be good for Super GT.
It really is. Like, as sometimes we can get cynical of the fact that, oh, here comes a Formula One driver to take all the limelight, and I know it's easy to feel like that, but Jensen Button has embraced this new role with open arms, and he's here to compete, and he's here to bring attention to a brand new series that a lot of people may not know through anything more than video games, like Gran Turismo Sport, where you can play the GT500 cars from Honda, Nissan, and Lexus in the latest free update.
And let's talk about changes coming up in 2018. We all know that the Suzuka 1000 kilometers out of the calendar. Suzuka is now just a 300-kilometer race. The two biggest races now all belong to one track, and that's Fuji, the Golden Week race, and the, I believe, it's 800-kilometer race.
Yes, it is still the Fuji GT 500-kilometer race, the Golden Week Classic, on May the 4th, this time out. Once again, unfortunately clashing with the 6 hours of Spa Francorchamps, so Kazuki Nakajima, Komui Kobayashi, until we develop better supersonic passenger travel or make gains in human cloning, they're not going to be at both events at the same time. So they brought back James Rossiter to spell for Kazuki Nakajima, the number 36 AU Toms car, and they're bringing up Shosu Boy, who has now a full-time ride with Tsuchiya Engineering. Note that's the former VBAC team Tsuchiya, who got a new title sponsor and reverted back to their old name. Shosu Boy is going to drive in place of Kobayashi in the Denso car alongside Kovalainen. But the big one that I'm talking here that looks like it has potential is the Fuji GT 500-mile race. For all the awesomeness that was the Suzuka 1000, if there was a drawback to the event, when it was added onto the Super GT calendar, it eventually felt like just another Super GT round, but longer. I feel like with this race, it has the potential to really be something that is a unique event, unique to this championship, that has its own mark and its own legacy. Granted, there have been 500-mile sports car endurance races at Fuji in the past. This was a staple of the old Group C All-Japan Endurance Championship way back in the 80s and the early 90s as well. But this is something that's still very new to Super GT, and I think it has potential to pick up right where the Suzuka 1000 kilometers left off. And Suzuka still has a good race to hold. It's now the Suzuka GT 300-kilometer fan festival. So they're really emphasizing, you know, this is a race for the fans. This is a race for Super GT enthusiasts all across Japan. It's still in a very good time of the year. It's going to be a very popular event at a magnificent track. And, of course, that's not to overshadow the other venues that this circuit has. Okayama to start the season, Motegi to end the year. You have the ultra-technical and high-altitude Autopolis circuit. You have the bullring that is Sportsland Sugo, and the ultra-hot Chang International Circuit in Thailand, the only flyaway round, which now moves up to July 1st. You can expect some punishing temperatures out of that one. So that's going to provide its own unique challenge.
And discussing other changes, is there any rules and regulations or on-track action that's going to maybe affect what we're going to see on track this year?
Yes, indeed, we do have some changes. Of course, I alluded to this earlier, fuel flow restrictions. They were implemented in three stages last year as part of GT500 Success Ballast. They've now been tightened up, so once you reach stage one, you now have even less fuel than you did if you reached stage one last year. There is also a provisional change to the qualifying format. Now, we will not likely see this until the sixth round at Sportsland Sugo, where there is not a lot of track real estate. But if you are familiar with road course qualifying in the IndyCar series, they basically divide the field in half based on the results from the seats on the session before. They have two effectively separate Q1 sessions for GT300, and the top half of each grid goes on to Q2. So qualifying round, again, this is a provisional change for 2018, and they expect to have it in full force for 2019. The big thing that they're looking at is tightening up the rolling start formation, because they saw a lot of cars weaving left and right, a lot of cars trying to break away, and a lot of cars making sudden stops to bunch up the grid. This became a point of contention at the Motegi GT Grand Final, where, if you may recall, the red car, the Motul GTR, and the Waco's 4CR, who were both in championship contention, the Motul GTR slowed down just a bit, and the Waco's 4CR ran into the back of him right before the start of the race, causing damage that would effectively ruin Lexus Team Le Mans Waco's race that day and their chances for the title. We could expect none of that to happen if these stricter formations are, in fact, enforced by GT500 and GT300. Other than that, we don't have the long-rumored virtual safety cars, and everything else is just as it was last season.
And I think that pretty much touches bases for what you can expect for Super Type Q and Super GT in 2018. Rory, do you have any final thoughts before we cut this thing off?
It's going to be another fantastic season of Super GT racing. Like I said, there's never been a better time to get into the sport. Obviously, through admittedly some of the work that I've done, and that's helped grow the coverage of Super GT in a number of different platforms in just the last year or two, which is something that, you know, it blows my mind that, you know, I had some part in doing this. And that's something that, as first and foremost a fan of the series, that's something that's it amazes me to this day. And I hope that everybody who tunes in has a good time watching from the first race of the season at Okayama on April 8th to the final round of the championship at Twin Ring Motegi on November the 11th. And every round in between, it's going to be fascinating racing. If you are a fan of sports car racing, if you're somebody who wants to see something different, I think there's never been a better time to get into Super GT. I mean, heck, you've got a V8-powered Toyota Prius and a Hatsune Miku car that's won 3 out of the last 7 championships in its category. And what more could you ask for out of a racing series than that?
I don't think you can squeeze anything more. And that basically wraps it up for this very special Japanese sports car and endurance preview of 2018. I want to thank my special guest, RJ O'Connell, for coming on the show. If you want to see more of him, you can follow his Twitter account at SuperGTWorld, or you can go on his subreddit, r/Super_GT. You'll find all the Super Type Q and Super GT news as it comes over there.
Yes, and of course, all written articles on supergtworld.wordpress.com. I've still not bought the domain name. And also on dailysportscar.com, where we will start to bring Super Tacu as well as continue our partnership with DSE to provide Super GT coverage to everybody who reads.
And with that, we're going to sign off, and we'll see you later in the future episode of Endurance Chat.
Later, y'all.